Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and today is one of those rare days where we actually disagree on what the number one martini ought to be. The issue at hand is Mitch McConnell yesterday on the Senate floor and also at a press conference. Basically, I think, Jim, laying out very well the Republican case for major changes, major reductions in size of government and spending. But in the end, McConnell's speech, I thought anyway, sounded more like a concession speech than one that said Republicans are going to keep fighting for this. Here's what he had to say towards the end of his speech on the Senate floor.
So Republicans will choose a path that actually reflects the will of the people, which is to do the responsible thing and ensure that the government doesn't default on its obligations, and to continue to press the administration to rein in Washington.
As if that weren't enough, he then proposed making it that members of Congress needed to vote by a two-thirds majority to oppose any automatic raise in the debt ceiling. And so obviously a lot of conservatives, many of which you chronicled on the Morning Jolt today, are very upset about this. You see things a little bit differently. Explain why.
So when I say, you know, they are not fans of it, Eric Erickson is comparing McConnell to Pontius Pilate. Washing his, and that apparently was the less inflammatory headline he could have gone with. I can only imagine that the Hitler and Stalin cropped up in the other one. So I should emphasize, this is not a good martini.
Right.
This is the least bad martini. I recognize that this would in effect be a full-fledged policy concession. In fact, there was another prominent conservative columnist who I ran into in the Fox News green room last night. He had said to me that if the Republicans concede the authority to raise the debt ceiling, they are effectively conceding their ability to control spending, and that is the worst thing they have ever done in politics. And so obviously there are deep, deep objections against this, and I get that, and I hear that. I think that what I'd put to anybody else, and Greg, feel free to take a swing at this, is give me a better alternative, which is to say, I believe, judging by the way McConnell is reacting, is that he looked into Obama's eyes and realized that he's playing chicken with a guy who has broken off the steering wheel, who has no intent of swerving out of the way. Obama believes that a default will work well for his reelection chances. Much as there'd be huge economic dislocation, I believe that he'd say, look at those unreasonable Republicans, look at how stubborn they are, look what they did to the economy. I'm not sure he's right. I actually think Americans would have a great deal of a pox on both your houses response to the whole thing. But in other words, McConnell realizes that Obama's only position is default or get Republicans to sign on to a deal that raises taxes. As you and I know, if Republicans sign on to a deal that raises taxes, the base stays home and or plots secession plans, since they've decided that the Republicans they elected in 2010 are good for nothing. The McConnell plan is an alternative that basically makes sure, all right, you want to raise the debt limit? All of this is going to be on the congressional Democrats, and all of this is going to be on President Obama. And we will head into 2012 letting Americans know that, look, we didn't want to do this. We voted against this three times. You guys voted for this every time, and it's all on you. That's probably politically about as good as you're going to get out of this. Now, again, I see the enormous policy concession in this, and if somebody wants to persuade me that there was a better alternative, Greg, take your shot.
I'll be happy to, because I think the biggest problem a lot of voters have, whether it's the Tea Party, the conservative base, or even a lot of independents that have trended towards the Republican Party, at least in the last election cycle and seemingly continuing into the presidential cycle, is that they want somebody to stand up to this. They feel, I think, like Republicans are basically quitting in about the 11th round of a 15-round heavyweight fight when there's still fighting left to be done. Whether or not you can get the president to agree to anything is obviously a different story. But in addition to that, you still have a lot of folks, including this guy, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, who's obviously an NR favorite and certainly someone we both admire very much, who is trying to tell everybody that the cliff is not that imminent.
Specifically, this talk about default on our debt is completely untrue. There's more than enough cash that will be coming into the Treasury in the form of ongoing tax revenue, actually more than 10 times the revenue that's necessary to avoid a default. So we're not going to have a default.
And so he's convinced that if the money is appropriately spent in the revenues that continue coming in, even after the debt ceiling limit is expired, that we can still honor our obligations. And it's really the president then. You can put in ads, if he chooses not to send out checks to veterans with disabilities and Social Security recipients, that he's the one really specifically pushing grandma off the cliff when the resources are clearly there to do that. Obviously, massive cuts would have to be made in other areas. But I think a lot of conservatives, and in my opinion, rightly so, are very upset over the fact that Republicans seemingly put up a pretty fierce fight for a while and now seem to be backing down just because they're not getting their demands agreed to. I think for the most part, you're going to have a very hard time seeing House Republicans going along with this. This may be Mitch McConnell just throwing out a test balloon, but I can't believe that the Republican majority in the House is going to go along with this.
As you're laying all that out, I want to put two more questions to you, and then I'll move on to the thoroughly bad martini. And that
sure.
One, if you consider this to be the 11th round of a 15th round fight, when is the 15th round?
I guess more in terms of just we've got a couple weeks left before the ceiling hits, and it really didn't intensify until the last few weeks. I guess it could be the 13th or 14th round, given how soon this is happening. I think they just basically want people to slug up till as late as humanly possible, and even past the deadline if necessary. You've got a lot of folks out there who are willing to go ahead and let the dice roll and let the president make these horrific decisions on cutting people's benefits rather than just capitulating like they seem to believe, and I think there's a lot of validity to it, that they believe McConnell's at least willing to do. I haven't heard the same from Boehner or Cantor yet, but it'll be interesting to see how they react to all that.
Presuming we get to, say, August 2nd, we were right up against that deadline. Nobody has budged. McConnell and let's say Boehner and Cantor in concurrence that Obama will not budge. He's not about to fold. Would you find this still to be an acceptable alternative? In other words, you're saying this is you don't like this in the 11th round, but if it is genuinely the 15th round, would you accept this as an alternative to, I guess, default, since Republicans are never going to vote for tax hikes?
If we were actually headed for an imminent default, it would be worth more serious consideration. But I think that's been one of the canards thrown out there. We are on the brink of imminent default when we've got enough revenues to cover it. And this is going to be a difficult decision politically, but electorally speaking, I think this is a disaster for Republicans to essentially say, well, we tried, I guess we'll give the president what he initially wanted, which was a clean raising of the debt ceiling, and we got absolutely nothing out of it.
Fair points, Greg. On to bad.
So on to the even worse martini now, and I guess we've kind of foreshadowed it. This is President Obama with CBS News anchor Scott Pelley yesterday, basically demagoguing the issue even further in a way that we've already referred to a couple of times here.
Can you tell the folks at home that no matter what happens, the Social Security checks are going to go out on August the 3rd? There are about $20 billion worth of Social Security checks that have to go out the day after the government is supposedly going to go into default.
I cannot guarantee that those checks go out on August 3rd if we haven't resolved this issue, because there may simply not be the money in the coffers to do it.
And this goes back again to prioritizing the revenues you do have at that point, if we get to that eventuality, Jim, where obviously the money will be there from existing tax revenues. Serious spending decisions would have to be made. But the president is clearly trying to get back the senior vote, which he obviously lost over the Obamacare situation from the past couple of years. This is one of those situations, again, where the rubber meets the road. We'll see what the American people really want when it comes to fiscal discipline in their government.
Greg, I guess he picked up all those political rhetoric that was checked at the door. It was laying around there. Nobody was using it, so he picked it up. I just would observe, on Monday, an entire 24 hours earlier, he had said, this is part of the problem with the political process, where folks are rewarded for saying irresponsible things to win elections or obtain short-term political gain. Well, you know, saying that Granny's going to starve in 3 weeks, good thing that's not irresponsible and for short-term political gain. Just for specifics, my understanding, according to James Pethakakis over at Reuters, on August 3rd, the Treasury has to make $22 billion in Social Security payments. Their cash balance on that day will be $74 billion. So you'll have $52 billion left over that you can apply to debt payments. You can apply to other – I mean, is it less than the government would like to have? Sure. You know, for the last 3 years, everybody's been getting by on less money than they'd like to have. You know, welcome to the real world, government. What I think we're seeing here, and it's kind of interesting to see the contrast with the mess in the EU and everything else, is that for a long time, to the federal government, or particularly to congressional appropriators, particularly to the way government spends, they always could get more money if they needed it. And this is the first time we're contemplating, oh, maybe that money won't be there. And you're seeing the crisis. And what has been happening is that how much of our economy has been based upon this idea that the government can borrow as much as it needs, whenever it needs, and never have to worry too much about paying it back, or that interest rates won't be that bad. Well, Reagan talked about a rendezvous with destiny. This is our rendezvous with reality. And hopefully the impact won't kill us.
Enough of President Obama. There's now time to focus on the First Lady and her ongoing campaign against obesity. She's already declared war on school lunches and all sorts of other things, soft drinks and candy, of course. And this week we got an interesting juxtaposition. For the first time ever, a celebrity has graced the cover of Better Homes and Gardens magazine. It's the first lady looking very fresh out in a meadow at a picnic table with all sorts of fruits and vegetables on the table, clearly depicting what she wants to see as healthier American eating to combat the obesity rise in this country. At the same time, stories are out there that she has recently ordered, I guess it was a meal, Jim, worth almost 1,600 calories. And I'm not exactly 1,700 calories. Sorry.
You're underestimating.
So I'm not one that counts a lot of calories. I'm told that's quite high. I know from time to time she says, well, I eat fries once in a while because I know I've been good on my previous meal. So I guess everybody can cheat on their diet a little bit now and then. But if, you know, she's the public face of healthy eating, that's probably not the best way to spread the message.
Yeah. And one of the things is that, you know, in the abstract is promoting healthy eating, particularly healthy eating for kids, a noble cause, of course. This is, you know, one of those things where you'd like to think that as long as it doesn't get into compulsion or the heavy hand of government, everybody could give her a little golf clap. Just periodically, she'll talk about this and she'll say things like, it's clear we as a nation have a responsibility to meet this as well. We can't just leave it up to the parents. And like, you know, giant red flashing lights go off when you hear that kind of stuff, particularly considering how, you know, during the campaign, she was saying some people have to give up part of their pie so that other people can have more. As Jeff Dobbs put it, look, you cannot have my pie. You can tax me, you can regulate me, but my pie is mine. Just a detail on the meal that she had over at Shack Burger or Shake Shack. It was a Shack Burger, fries, chocolate shake. Apparently, Shack Burgers are huge, and I don't know if it was, you know, fried onion or all kinds of stuff on it. But also, I would note a Diet Coke, Greg.
Oh, that is okay.
It reminded me of an old story about George Foreman back in his pre-grilling days, back when he was, you know, a boxer, obviously in pretty good shape, being a championship boxer, but also having a voracious appetite. Apparently, one time he went to McDonald's and ordered, the story goes, 50 cheeseburgers. And then he ordered a Diet Coke. He's watching his weight. He's trying to make it a healthy meal. So obviously, look, if you're going to say everybody's got to eat healthier, you want to set a good example, well, when you go out and do this sort of thing, you're going to get quite a bit of mockery and worthwhile. And, you know, I think one of the other bloggers named The Lonely Conservative put it, says, look, I don't care what Michelle Obama eats. It's none of my business. But she seems to think what I eat, what I feed my children is her business, which makes her a big hypocrite. And I think I'd have to concur with that, that let's not make virtue into a compulsory government policy. Next thing you know, at that point, Greg, we won't be able to plug in the light bulbs we want.
Oh, wait. Already done. And we failed to move it along last night in the House, which is very, very sad. So now we have to hoard. So all these incandescent bulbs. It's interesting you brought up George Foreman because I just assume since the Queen of Healthy Eating ate at Shack Burger that they have a whole series of George Foreman grills back there to drain off all the excess saturated fat. I just assume that was part of the deal. I guess not. But
at 1,700 calories, my guess is no.
Probably not. Jim, I know you'll be traveling for work the next couple days. Have a great time. We'll check back in with you on Monday.
All right. Looking forward to Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.